Hey, everyone, and welcome to another episode of the Just Get Started podcast. I'm your host, Brian Andreyko, and thanks again for being a part of this journey. On today's episode, I welcome in Jess Ekstrom, who is the founder of Mic Drop Workshop. She's an author, she's a speaker, and she's the host of the podcast Amplify. Let me give you a quick background on Jess, and then we're going to jump into the episode. Jess Ekstrom is a Forbes top-rated speaker, two-time seven-figure social entrepreneur, mom, and HarperCollins best-selling author of Chasing the Bright Side and Create Your Bright Ideas. She's on a mission to help women speak with confidence so they can make an impact and income. Today, Jess is the founder and chief creative officer at Mic Drop Workshop and continues to rack up her airline miles speaking at companies like Edward Jones, Zappos, Canva, LeaderCast Live, Magnolia, and more. You can find her either writing her next book or traveling in an Airstream with her family. So I hope you all enjoy this wide-ranging conversation with Jess. We actually did this in person at Earfluence Studios here in Raleigh, North Carolina, where we both live. So it was awesome to actually get to meet with her and actually do it in person. Just a great dynamic in person. I haven't done a ton in the past, but I'm definitely going to do more in-person podcast interviews going forward because the energy is just off the charts, way different than doing it remotely through Squadcast like I normally do. So anyways, I hope y'all enjoy this conversation and get a lot out of it. Without further ado, please welcome in Jess Ekstrom.
You ready?
Just get started.
Let's get started. Let's jump into it. This is fun. Well, it's so fun. Like as we were talking before, where I haven't done a ton of in person.
Yeah.
You know, and this is cool to actually have, like, I know you do this a lot, so it's.
No, I mean, it's like, I think we've gotten so comfortable, maybe not comfortable is the right word, but just like convenient to do like Zoom and calls where that's just become the default. Yeah. And then until you're like in person with someone, you're like, oh, there's an extra layer of energy that you're not getting. Yeah. And it's the same with like speaking and coming back to events where there's actually an audience and people are, you know, meeting each other while they're in line getting coffee. There's just like a level of energy within person that is just like really hard to replicate on Zoom. Yeah. So I'm glad we're in person.
No, this is great. And I think, you know, we did get so comfortable during the pandemic that it's hard to break out of that shell. I know we were talking before about trying to do that more this year. Maybe this is a good starting point. At least I was going to start somewhere different, but now that we're here, let's go there. When you started speaking, and I know it's been many years ago, was there a lot of fear and anxiety? Like, did you have a hard time breaking out of that shell, or was that always your personality to kind of be out in front of people?
So I started in college, I would teach fitness classes. And I think that was, if I can like give advice to anyone who wants to get comfortable with public speaking, it's like find ways to just get reps in. Doesn't matter if you're like, it's in front of three people or whatever it might be. And so in college, I would teach fitness classes. I would give tours. And little did I know, I was just starting to exercise that muscle. So by the time I started speaking professionally, I would still get nervous, but it wasn't like this was the first time I was standing in front of people. And so I always encourage people, it's like, even if it's just raising your hand in a meeting, even if it's just like speaking up at your kid's PTA meeting, what can you do to just start to exercise that muscle so that it doesn't seem so scary when it is time?
Well, what about people though that they don't feel like they have anything important to say? Like they don't think, I don't have any good ideas. I'm not the one to be the one to lead.
Right.
Someone else can do that. How do you get them to get started?
I call it the 10% ahead rule. A lot of times we think we like glorify speakers as like these end all be all, you know, you have like the TED stage with the spotlight and you're like get a million views or whatever. But what I think makes a great speaker is someone who is 10% ahead on a certain topic, whether it's like confidence, vulnerability, sales, whatever it might be. So you're not coming up there as, and I even hesitate using the word expert because I think it like sets a precedent that you need to be all knowing. And it's really important that you're still a student and still have that level of curiosity. And so what is it that you feel maybe you're 10% ahead on, or something that you're passionate enough about where you could become 10% ahead on with a little bit extra work? And that's then go when you're 10% ahead, not when you feel like you're 100% ahead, because then that will never happen. And I would say the other thing to that too is, like, audience members, when we think about great speakers, like, audience members are not looking for the robotic, like, person that is like step one, step two, step three. And so if audience members aren't looking for perfect, then, like, why waste our time trying to be? I mean, it's like there's artificial intelligence, like, threatening all of these jobs. But when it comes to speaking, like, the human experience and the level of vulnerability that you need to have with it as well, that's something that, like, AI can't replicate. Yeah. And so I think instead of, if you want to be a speaker, questioning yourself of, like, do I have enough to say, or is what I'm saying important or valuable enough? What are you 10% ahead on, and how can you use your lived experiences to teach that lesson? Yeah. That's where I would start.
No, I love that. Can you share, now that we're on that, can you share the speech that made you a speaker? You know what I'm talking about?
Oh, yeah. Well, it's so funny because, again, we think of speaking as like, oh, I, you know everything. I am perfect. And so when I first started speaking, I would ask myself, like, well, what would a speaker do? What would a speaker wear? I would show up in, like, a blazer when I'm not really, like, the blazer-wearing type. I would use, like, vocabulary that maybe I typically wouldn't use, and I would go up there to try to prove my credibility. When the moment you are on stage, the moment you have an opportunity to be a speaker, consider your credibility already there, or save it for the person who's introducing you instead of using your time on stage to tell people why you should be there.
Yeah.
And so I felt like I was getting... I was trying to speak. It wasn't really happening. Like, and there was one talk. It was free. It was for, like, an old college professor for, you know, a class that I was in. And it was like one of your typical sitcom bad days. It was like raining, forgot an umbrella, got a parking ticket that morning. Like, just one of those days where I just had it and I just couldn't muster up. And there was like 12 people in the class. I was like, what am I doing here? The teacher wasn't even there. He just kind of left me a note to, like, talk about what I was doing. Yeah. And I go in and I just am not giving the speech of all the things I've done right. Instead, I was like, I'm just going to tell them the real story of how I got started and including the things that I royally messed up on and what I would do differently. And I would say that is the speech that made me a speaker, because it wasn't about making myself look good or be perceived in a certain way. It was about using, again, my lived experiences and my story to help progress them. And sometimes that means our greatest lessons come from our worst moments, and we need to be able to share those in the spirit of advancing the audience, not increasing your perception, if that makes sense. Yeah.
Why do you think that was the day? Do you look back on that at all?
Yeah. Or? I think like any of us, we get tired of running. You know, I think that you've probably experienced that. We get tired of running and chasing things that don't feel authentic. And I think one of the quickest ways to, like, burn out for me is trying to show up in a role and trying to show up in a almost like a costume. And it's really easy to do in such, like, a social media, like, public perception driven world. And when you constantly are having to change who you are before you open the door, it can be really exhausting, and it'll catch up to you. And then even if it does work, even if you do build a following, even if you create something that goes viral, great. Now you have to keep up that role because you've built a foundation on, like, you've built a castle, but it's a sand castle. You know, it's not real. And so I think for me, when I became the speaker that I want to be, it was giving myself permission to show up as myself in my full story, in my honest truth, instead of trying to emulate or personify what I thought a successful speaker would be.
Yeah.
And so not only did I become a better speaker, I also got more energy around it because I wasn't questioning myself or having hesitation or pause before, like, how would someone act in this situation? It's just what would I do?
Yeah. Or how am I supposed to get like the reaction out of this room versus yes. the next one I go speak in? You're trying to be a chameleon for some reason.
Yeah. Cause you know? Can go in and I'm sure you've done this. There's like, you can go in, give the same talk, wear the same thing, have the same tone. And one person is like, my life is forever changed because of you. I want to tattoo your words on my back. And another person is like,
yeah.
You know, it's so having this pressure to adjust yourself to be liked is a never ending and not successful process because it's all individualized. Mm-hmm. And someone might think your podcast is like, I mean, I'm sure someone does think this podcast is like the best thing that has ever been in their ears. And then for someone else, it's not going to be for them. And so if you try to be for everyone, you end up being for no one because mm-hmm. you're just walking this like neutral vanilla line that's not going to resonate.
Mm. Yeah, so true. And I think too with if you get a shtick, you mentioned it earlier, like all of a sudden you have to now play that role for longer than you may want.
Yes.
And you get tired and burn out and you can't just be yourself.
Yeah. You know? Yeah. I think that happened to me. And I'm curious how this resonates with your sales training too. I hired a coach one time because I felt like I was just really tired all the time and I wasn't energized in like my team meetings. I felt like I wasn't doing a good job as a leader. I was just tired. And through this coach, I realized that I had been kind of neglecting how I naturally like to communicate, mm-hmm. which I like to be pretty direct. But also as a woman, there is this added pressure to be nice and be put some sugar around everything. Yeah, right. And I realized that stepping into that role and constantly having pause and hesitation around my communication was exhausting me. And then once I realized that, like, man, my natural style is just to be more direct and I can still be nice and I can still be kind by being direct, it changed everything for me. And my energy levels got better and I felt like my leadership got better. So it goes back to like, feeling the need to edit yourself before you enter a room or enter a conversation mm-hmm. can be extremely exhausting as it pertains to sales or as it pertains to being a leader or a speaker, whatever it might be.
Yeah. Even relationships too.
Relationships. Think of how
people totally. Show up like going on dates and stuff. People show up like, you know, a totally different version than they are a month or two later.
Right. It's like, but, well, what happens if they fall in love with you? Then you got to keep up this role. Yeah.
Well, I see that a lot in the sales world. And as someone that's been in sales for many years, I was like this early on where I was very monotone, very like, I'm here, like, you know, excited, curious, all this stuff. I'd get on a call and I'd be like very stiff and very like professional. And I didn't know what the hell I was doing until I realized, I was like, wait a minute, why don't I just be Brian the same throughout and just improve who I am and become a better version, but do that throughout wherever I talk to. And it's amazing how that improves my sales performance because I'm just being human, what people expect, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. It is like, and I also think, you know, you can still be empathetic to who that person is. You can still take their like position into consideration when you're like in a room, but you don't have to, like you said, be a chameleon and like match exactly what they are, what you think that they would like. Yeah. Because that is just, ain't nobody got time for that.
Yeah. Well, and I think too, and maybe it's a good transition around like leaning into who you really are and showing up as who you are, not who you want. Maybe the world thinks you are and you're trying to play some role. A couple times, and I'm sure this has been more than two times, but I know a couple times in your life, obviously one with Make-A-Wish. Mm-hmm. But what I really want to talk about was 2018 banking conference.
Oh. You
know where I'm going with this? Because this really was the catalyst moment where I know a lot of people, I've done this many times, is you run the other way.
Yeah.
You see an idea, you get a spark, and you're like, that's for someone else.
Yeah.
But you've kind of leaned in and made this a purpose and a mission. Can you share that story of what happened?
Yeah.
And then we'll go
I love how much you've done your homework. I can tell you're good at this. So yeah, I think sometimes like we have these crossroads in our life, and it doesn't mean it has to be an entrepreneur or like a business idea, but it's like you open a cupboard expecting something to be there and it's not. And then you have the choice of whether you're going to be like, well, I guess it's not there, or do I need to go create this? And that has happened for me, I would say in these two bigger ways. You know, one was my first company that I started when I was in college, Headbands of Hope. I was interning at Make-A-Wish and saw a lot of kids wanted to wear headbands after hair loss. And so that was like the first time I realized what it was like to create something that you wish existed. And that really gave me kind of the training wheels to start thinking that way and looking for pain points, looking for gaps, looking for white space on campuses. And it's like, well, something should be here, because most of the time when you're looking for something, that means someone else is too. And so it was 2018. I was speaking at this banking conference, and I thought I did a really good job. I got home, and then like a week or two later, the event planner called me, and she was kind of serious, not somber, but serious. It was like, I just want to talk about the results of the, you know, reviews that we did. Yeah. And I was like, oh shoot, I thought I did a really good job, but this is not sounding so positive. Right. And she goes, off the record, I just want to let you know that out of all of the audience reviews, you ranked highest amongst our keynote speakers that weekend. And I was like, fan-freaking-tastic. Yeah. What's the issue? Yeah. And she goes, we paid you $8,500 to come speak, and we paid our morning male keynote $50,000 to come speak. Yeah. She goes, just woman to woman, person to person, like, raise your rates.
Yeah.
And my jaw was on the floor. And it's not his fault for asking for $50,000. Like, and I think that's like a key point too, is that ask for what you want. And it's not like, I'm glad that people can do that. But it was like when I had no idea what other people were charging, and it was this turning point for me. I'm like, well, what are men getting paid versus what women are getting paid in speaking, and how often are there opportunities for women to get paid? And so that kind of started this whole quest of the equality of women speakers in like the speaking landscape, which eventually led me to start Mic Drop Workshop, which is our training company for women to become confident speakers at work and professional speakers in their jobs. And the stats, I mean, are insane. Less than 30% of speakers are women. And then the pay gap for women, especially of women of color, is just a totally different ballgame. So that's why we exist. Yeah.
Let me ask you this. Did you think 8,500 was a lot?
Oh, like, I thought I could retire. You know, I was like, I've made it.
Yeah.
And I still think that that's a lot of money. But now I know that with speaking, I think one of the common mistakes is like, people quote themselves as an hourly rate, but with speaking, consider them, they're not paying for the moment you're on stage. They're paying for the aftermath of you on stage. Mm. So what happens after you step off? How is their productivity, their work ethic, their engagement at work, the culture? What did you do that's going to create a ripple effect to their bottom line? That's what people pay for. And so it's not like, oh yeah, I charge $50,000 an hour. It's like, well, what's the aftermath worth of what you speak on?
Yeah, that makes sense. Yeah, it's kind of like bringing in, you know, with coaching and stuff, you bring in the right person.
Yeah.
You would charge them, or you would obviously pay them a certain fee because you want a certain result. That's really what
exactly. They pay for the result, not for the time.
Yeah.
You know, on stage. Yeah.
Why do you think then, and I've actually thought about this in recent years, you know, again, doing this for now in seventh year, I get a ton, and probably because all my information's online, you get people after people, booking agencies, all this stuff that say, hey, Brian, I have these great guests. I would say predominantly, I would probably guess 80 to 90% are men.
Are men, yeah.
Yeah. And so I'm curious from your perspective, like, why, is it because like the women don't feel like they have a voice, or they should be the one speaking? Like, what are you feeling like, or what are you seeing, I guess?
Yeah. Well, one, I love that you even have a pulse on that, because I think that's like step one to helping change it is just noticing the discrepancy.
Yeah.
So I went to this conference. It was after this banking conference. So I was like, you know, starting to think about it, and I was speaking at it, and it was a conference for event planners. And after I spoke, there was a panel about like diversity in the speaking industry. And it was all the meeting planners for the huge, you know, Silicon Valley companies up on stage. And it was about why there is such a lack of women, you know, in the speaking space. And one of the panelists said, look, we want to hire more women speakers, but they're less than 12% of the applications that we get every year to come up on stage. And so I think the issue comes from a couple different directions. One, it's like, well, who's picking it? And a lot of times in any position, people pick people who look like themselves or in the pond that they're fishing in. So if you are putting out an application at a, for an internship and the college is predominantly white, are you also putting out the same application at historically black colleges and universities? Mm-hmm. And so it's where are you fishing and who's fishing? But then on the other end, it's there's the stat that almost everyone has heard of and knows that's like men apply for jobs when they meet, you know, 10, 20% of the qualifications. Women will only apply for the job if they meet 90 to 100% of the qualifications. Mm. And so I think part of my job at Mic Drop Workshop is debunking the myth of the extent of qualifications that you need to have to be a speaker. Mm. You don't need to have a best-selling book. You don't need to have this like revolutionary theory that no one's ever heard of before. So how can I shorten like the list that women feel like they need to have in order to take that first step? And so that's part of the goal of Mic Drop Workshop is like making them feel qualified in who they are and what they are right now, instead of falling into the one day, someday fallacy, which tends to happen a lot. Yeah.
Let's noodle on that for, actually, I have a note here. Your friend, Megan Riley.
You know Megan? Oh, I love her.
Question from her. So she mentioned, so I think this is a good transition, is what are the key traits you see in people that are professional speakers or just speaking a lot? What are some key attributes? Is there any?
Yeah, that's a great question. I would say the first thing is a focus. One of the mistakes I see a lot of speakers make is like on their website, they list topics they can speak on. Leadership, confidence, mindset, you know, all of this. And anyone can list topics, but not anyone can deliver a key takeaway. Mm-hmm. And so if you are constantly customizing and changing your speech every single time you get up on stage, it's not going to become a bulletproof product. People will pay $10, $15, $20, $50,000 for a speech that is proven and that you've given before. But if it's every single time you're coming up there and customizing it based on what the meeting planner asks you to do, you're starting at zero every time. So knowing what you want to be known for and having that focus and delivering a keynote signature talk that is yours, that's where I would want you to spend your time. Mm-hmm. I think the second part of that, once you've determined what that focus is finding ways to further your knowledge. Your job as a speaker is not just going to be going and delivering your talk, but like, how are you furthering your knowledge in that area? Are you doing your own research? Are you listening to podcasts? Are you interviewing people? What are ways that you further your knowledge so you stay on the pulse of what it is? And then I would say the third thing that I see speakers do is they find a microphone that is not a stage. So is it a newsletter? Is it a podcast? Is it a LinkedIn, you know, series that you do? But what are ways that you can practice, perform, meet people that is in this zone that you speak on? And also it is putting your name out there as like, you are the expert in this way. If you're showing up on LinkedIn every week talking about the topic that you speak on, and there's the word speaker in your bio, that you're creating those opportunities for meeting planners to find you and knowing who you are and what you stand for. So I think focus, furthering your knowledge, and finding a microphone that is in a stage and being consistent with it.
Well, that goes back to what we were talking about earlier about not being the chameleon and always changing. Like, what's your lane?
Yeah.
What do you believe in? And then talk about that.
Yes. Right? Yes. Yeah, for sure. I think that if you do anything, it's like, what do you want to be known for is the biggest question. In Mic Drop Workshop, one of the first things that we do is we create what's called a transformation promise. And it's after people hear me speak, they will blank. So we talk about what do you want them to believe and what do you want them to achieve after hearing you. And then your talk is in pursuit of that transformation. So what do people need to understand in order to arrive there? And so it's all about the clarity of the aftermath, which is your value, and then work backwards and create your talk from there. So a lot of people are like, well, I got to speak for an hour. What should I speak on? Start with the aftermath. What's the transformation? And then what do people need to know in order to arrive there?
Well, and you mentioned too, the number one with focus, I see this, well, this is kind of like the, from a comedy standpoint, right? Like I just watched, you know, Taylor Tomlinson.
Oh, I love Taylor Tomlinson.
She just had her third Netflix special.
I know, it was so good.
Oh my God. But like, she's not just showing up on Netflix that night.
No.
She's practicing over and over, iterating. And I think that's the challenge you can get into, right? If you always are changing, you don't really know what's going to resonate with the audience.
Yeah, exactly. And I would say the reason why it's so good to find a microphone that isn't a stage is because it's really tough to practice material the moment you're hired. It's like the, if, you know, I don't know, like if an athlete, the only time they got to know if they could land a trick was at the Olympics. It's like, well, that's a lot of pressure. And so I try to find like, and it, with my podcast Amplify, it's like, that is a great way for me to meet people. It's a great way for to get my name out there. But more importantly, for me, my purpose with Amplify is a way to also test material in my own sandbox that I can then go use on stage. Because it's hard to be like, okay, you're paying me to do my job. Oh, I'm also going to experiment and test something that doesn't really work in the speaking business. So finding ways to do that in your own ecosystem. And like now we just have so many platforms. I mean, almost too many. I'm like, am I on TikTok or YouTube? What am I doing? Pick one and use that as your sandbox to test content, test material. I don't care if you have three listeners. It's a way to just start getting those reps in and see what feels good.
Yeah. I mean, the ideas come from putting in the work, from writing, for whatever it is, even just sitting down, even if, you have zero people and you're just writing and you're journaling, those ideas come because you might not come day one, but day 12, all of a sudden you're like, oh, wait a minute, that's fitting together.
And it's so, which is why your topic of just getting started is important, because I find the more successful I get, the more analysis paralysis I also get. Like, when you are new at something and you feel like there are no eyes on you, there's no fishbowl, and there's also no standard, like you have no idea what this could be, it's really, in my opinion, a lot easier to leap because you haven't defined what success is. You don't know what failure feels like. It's just easier. But then the more you rise and the more you can kind of look down on the ladder and be like, oh shoot, like what if I make a mistake or what will people think? The more you pause before you hit go. And that is like the biggest thief of ambition is like that pause. And, you know, whenever I am writing something, it's like, you can't be an author, an agent, and an editor at the same time. You just got to be the author. And so it's like the pause and the hesitation you have before you create something is going to make the creative results like that much smaller, because your goal as like a creative or creator is not to get it right on the first try. It's literally just to like empty the cupboards and then figure it out.
Yeah. And something I love that you said is, I've never started before, so I guess I won't start.
Yeah.
Versus, I've never started before, so I guess I'll start here.
Yeah. two. I
really love that mindset.
Yeah. I mean, and it's so easy to fall into both. It's like, well, I've never done it before, so I can't do it. Or I've never done it before, so what better time, you know? And it's like this internal choice that we make when we're a beginner at something. Mm-hmm. And being a beginner, the older we get, is a really vulnerable place to be. You know, we were talking before we were recording about our kids and like how my daughter is learning to walk, and she can like fall on her face and mess up with absolutely no judgment of who she is and her abilities. Mm. And so it was such a reminder to me that judgment over failure is learned. It's not innate. It's like taught to us. Yeah. And so if the older we get and the more things we do right, the harder it is to be forgiving when things go wrong. Mm. And it's like becoming a parent has been such a reminder of like mistakes are inevitable and the judgment is avoidable. But that has to be almost unlearned, you know, as you get older.
Yeah, that's so true.
Yeah.
Would you encourage folks, again, based on your kind of trifecta here of different traits or things to do to get started, would you say like today, like if they're not going to get a speaking opportunity, it might be weeks or months, yeah, who knows, but start doing something outside of that, write, do a podcast, do something that starts kind of honing that muscle.
Yeah. And I would say if you're like wanting to explore what that is, you know, asking yourself, like, what do people come to me for advice for? You know, what is the thing that people keep coming to me for? Or I like to talk about like, what's the chorus in your life? If you were to kind of go through, like fast forward a film strip of your past, you know, 5, 10 years, what is like a theme or a lesson that you keep learning that keeps popping up? Or if you could put a word to it, what would you do? Mm-hmm. And then whatever keeps coming up, like that chorus, how can you further your knowledge in that area? And I yes, you can wait to start, you know, pitching yourself for speaking opportunities. But in Mic Drop Workshop, like, we're really adamant about don't wait till all your boxes are checked to start, because oftentimes if you get booked to speak, it's going to be minimally a month from now, sometimes 6 months to a year. So you'll have time to prepare. And so look at like, where do I work? Do they need speakers? Where did I go to school? Colleges and high schools love to hire alumni to come speak. Local chambers of commerce, your local Rotary organizations, local libraries have speaker series. Like, there is stuff all around you to start getting those reps in.
Yeah.
And I almost feel like, you know, just ripping the Band-Aid and calling yourself a speaker is probably the hardest thing I see, especially for women. It's like, put the word in your bio. That will take 30 seconds, but it creates an internal shift that's like, I am a speaker, and also an external awareness. It's like, oh, she speaks.
Yeah.
And so that's one small thing you can do that can make a big impact.
Yeah. Yeah, you can go, like, I actually got asked just through like an old manager of mine to speak at a career fair for middle schoolers in a couple months.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
Even something as simple as that.
Simple as
get
that.
Get in front of those kids and just, you know, share whatever and try to.
So. And what I'll say, one, I think like, that's incredible just for the kids. But two, I have spoken at places that I am like have crossed off as, you know, just a fun opportunity. But someone's parent might be in the room who is the, you know, booking manager for XYZ or knows that person. And then all of a sudden they see you. And so it's like every single time you speak, you're increasing the odds of speaking again. And that's with whatever you do and whatever you put out there. It's like these, this might sound like Hakuna Matata, but like these like frequency waves that if you are just in your room perfecting your talk, you're not creating that frequency. So I would rather go speak at a career fair when I feel 60 to 70% good about what I'm delivering versus waiting for the perfect time where I feel 100% good and missing all of those frequency opportunities where I could have those collision points with someone who could book me for a super big opportunity. Like I was talking to you about next week, you know, I'm opening for Deion Sanders at a conference. And if I could draw the line of the people that I had to collide with and the stages that I was on, it's probably like a 10 degree separation that started 6 years ago that I spoke at a school. Another speaker was there who booked speakers for, who knew this other conference. I spoke at that conference 2 years later. Someone in the audience was the agent for this person who then put me on this. And it was like, if I can draw the line as to how I'm opening for Deion Sanders next week, it's like 10 steps over 6 years. But if I had waited till like I felt really good and didn't speak at that school 6 years ago, I wouldn't be opening for Deion Sanders next week.
Yeah, you don't know what that, I think that's the thing. We get in this point where like we think we know what's going to happen. So we tell ourselves these stories like, well, I'm not going to do that because X is, that's probably going to happen. We don't know. It's made
up.
We have no idea.
Yeah.
So why don't we put ourselves in those? And it's a little, you got to be uncomfortable. You got to be vulnerable a little bit. But yeah, you never know who you're going to run into. I like the collide word because that's really what it is. Like, you're colliding.
Yes, exactly.
Just randomness.
Yeah. And I think that it's also comforting for someone like me who can be really hard on myself, and like, and I'm sure you are too. I'm sure people who are listening to this kind of podcast can be very goal driven. Yeah. And you're like, this is the thing that has to happen. This is the thing that has to make me successful. And maybe it's like a certain revenue goal or a certain job title or, you know, a certain number of followers, whatever it might be. And then you start like chasing that thing. And it's like every single time you maybe get what you want or you get closer, I call it, or I've heard what it's called is like a false summit, because it's like all of a sudden you now have viewpoint to all the other things that you haven't accomplished. Mm-hmm. And so that way, like, yeah, you're still chasing, but chasing what? You're no longer chasing a goal. Now you're chasing a feeling. And that feeling of accomplishment and success is something that like probably isn't going to be uncovered by like one title or one thing. Yeah. It's going to be when you feel like the internal lines up with the external. And so it's like, how long does it take and how many things do you have to chase before you realize where the internal lines up with the external? Like, if that makes sense, that's something I've been exploring. Yeah.
Well, it's gotta be this larger vision, I think, because I kind of think of it like output versus outcome goals. We were talking about like the running earlier and before we recorded here, but it's kind of like, if you think of the finish line, you know, if you're only thinking, oh, once I get up on stage at the conference, Deion's there, that's it. Well, that's going to fleet, because the day after you're going to be fleeting. Like, what's the next thing?
Totally.
So it's having that mission, which you have with Mic Drop and some other stuff, is like, hey, this is really the mission. These are just things that are great opportunities that come and make me grow as a person, right?
Yeah. It's a love-hate relationship with like singular outcomes and goals, because sure, it can be great to have something that you set your sights on. But also at the end of the day, you know, I've been self-employed for 12 years at this point. And without fail, every year when we wrap and we look at our year in review, there is like multiple line items of opportunities that were great for us that I didn't even know existed like in January, you know? And so it's also like, well, what is your gas in the tank? Like, what's the internal that you're working for? Mm-hmm. And you sometimes don't even know what's possible in the external. There are endless winning scenarios that are never going to be on your vision board because you don't even know that they exist yet. Right. And so I think what's like more important is like, what's the gas in the tank? What's the mission statement? What am I trying to advance or progress? And then all of those external things, the money, the validation, I'm not saying all those things are wrong, but it's really hard to be singularly focused on specific outcomes when there's a lot of different outcomes that could happen that you don't even know that are on the table.
What you talk about being self-employed for 12 years. What did you want to do? Like going into college, what were you going to do for a living?
I wanted to be a journalist, and it's funny. Do you know, what did you want to be when you grew up?
I want to be 20 different things. I want to be an architect at one point, an attorney. I want to play pro golf, you know.
Is there like a through line to any of it that is like what you do now or what you do today?
I think the biggest thing, this is actually my mentor, Rich, I'll give him credit, helped me understand, like, you know, kind of defined by my one word as a navigator. And really helping navigate people, because I've always found that kind of coaching. Like, I was a golf professional as my first career. Like, I taught golf for a living. Yeah. And now I look at what I do, where coaching and helping others and sales coaching and stuff. So it's kind of funny how the through line has really been trying navigate. To guide other people to improve their
I
state.
Love that. Yeah. I think it's such an interesting question for anyone who's listening. Like, what did you want to be when you grew up? And is, even if you're not doing that thing, which rarely we are.
Yeah.
What's a through line to like what you do or believe or care about today? And so, you know, I had always wanted to be a journalist, and it started from watching my family go through a pretty significant public scandal when I was in high school and being in the news every day, people I loved being in the news, and realizing like the way that the story is told matters so much. And how the story is told matters so much. And so I think I wanted to be a journalist also to feel a sense of control over what was happening. Like, well, if I can be the one to tell it, then it'll be different. But I think as I started marching down that path, the through line for me is story. Like, I love being able to use stories to influence opinions, to influence beliefs, to influence behavior. And that's what. And originally that was just through my own actions. Like, how many stages can I get on where I can tell my story? How many books can I write to where I tell my story? And then I realized, like, again, it's just when your success is only to the degree of how far and how fast you can go, it's extremely limiting and it's extremely exhausting. And so with Mic Drop Workshop, where we train women to become professional speakers and authors and thought leaders, all of a sudden my success is like multiplied, because it's not based on how far I can reach, but how far I can help other women reach in this space and through story. And so I think finding that through line of like what I always wanted to be and what I believed in to what I'm doing today is really interesting and a cool thing for people to think about.
Yeah. How would you actually, now we're on it, I'm kind of curious, talking to the eighth grade class, the career fair. What them having to look forward because they're, I mean, let's be honest, right? Most of the people around them are telling them, hey, go to college, get a job, you know, go to entry level, work your way up. Like, that's still the norm, I think. And not that it's a bad thing, but I'm kind of curious what you might say to them as like a great piece of advice for them to think about their career.
Yeah. You know, it's funny. I wrote a kid's book called Create Your Bright Ideas, and it's middle-aged, and it's about, you know, starting that entrepreneurial muscle early. But I think that one of the greatest questions that we can ask ourselves, instead of like, what do I want to be when I grow up, is like, what influence do I want to have? And how do I have a career that helps me achieve that? And so I think about like a Venn diagram of like, where do my greatest talents and the things that I enjoy doing meet the world's greatest needs? Like, how do those things intersect and overlap in a way that I can get paid to do it? So, for example, like, you know, when I Create Your Bright Ideas came out and I did the book tour and did all these like schools and Girls on the Run organizations, and had at the end of the book, you create a business plan for your idea. And so I would go through these girls' business plans, and it was like, you know, one of them loved dogs, and she wanted to create like an arcade that was also a shelter, so you could like play games and also meet with dogs. And it was like the most random but also amazing idea. I'm like, that is fantastic. It brings people in the door and also like helps dogs. And then another girl, she really cared about the oceans and the trash on the beach, and she also loved to do art and create things. So she actually did this, and she created a company where she would pick up trash, bottles, caps, all of that plastic on the beach, make it into art and sell it, and go towards like these ocean conservation funds. And so where can your talents and passions overlap with the world's needs? It's a big question, but it's a great starting point, especially for a kid.
How do, like, so someone like that, let's say they're teenagers, right? And let's just use high school as an example, getting to your college. How do they take that idea and run with it?
Yeah.
Because, I mean, for us, at least as adults, maybe we have resources, maybe financially or whatever. Like, how would you encourage them to, and this is a random tangent that I thought we'd go on for the conversation, but like, I'm curious how you would maybe tell them to take that first step. So any of those ideas, maybe it's another one.
Yeah, for sure. I think that when you are a student, whether it's high school, college, middle school, it is the perfect time to start an idea or pursue something, because it is, one, you're in the greatest do-over period of your life. Nothing that you do today, like if your business fails or succeeds, it's not going to have, I mean, like this crazy ripple effect. Mm-hmm. And then it is a one role that lets you wear the hats of dozens of roles. And so even if your business doesn't work out, you now have mountains and mountains and mountains of data and information mm-hmm. of what you do want to do. And whether that means applying for jobs or going somewhere else. But I feel like one of the ways that school does a lot of things, but I don't think it teaches us a lot of where, like how to try on those hats. And like the fact that you're, 17 years old and you're supposed to pick a college based on a profession, how do you know that? Yeah. So starting a business is such a great way to gather more data around yourself and what you love and what you never want to do again. And I would say that, you know, I started my first company in college, and yeah, I didn't have a lot of money or I didn't have a lot of experience, but I had the resources of a university and a school. I got my first logo from a graphic design school that used it as a class project. I rented the fancy cameras from the library because I didn't have one myself to take pictures of photos. I pitched myself as a op-ed in the paper for marketing. Like, so what does your school have, or not even your school, your community, mm-hmm. anything, and how can you use that to leverage your business and your idea? Because you'd be surprised of the amount of like learning opportunities that come with starting a business while you're in school, and hopefully how encouraging professors and teachers are as to like using that as a case study in your class.
Well, I think that's great advice for just in general, right, of people getting started, because so many times, and I hear this a lot, is like, Brian, I don't have the time, or I don't have the resources or whatever. So I think that there's a great opportunity there of, well, who's next door to you? Who do you work with? Who do you whatever? And I think to your point, probably with Mic Drop, you're not telling people to go quit your job today and become a professional speaker.
No. Yeah.
It's get in front of your board of directors and present, get in front of a classroom, do things that it's really like one small step that ultimately brings you up again to collide with other individuals in a different way.
Yeah. And that actually led us to create one of our new programs at Mic Drop called Mic Drop Workforce, where we realized there was this whole population of women who were coming to us that are like, I don't need to get paid to speak. I don't need to give a TED talk. I just want to get better at speaking for my job. I want to lead a meeting without sweating. I want to handle Q&A without getting flustered. I want to give a presentation that's meaningful and succinct and powerful. And so we now have a new training that helps serve women at work. And a lot of it, though, whether you want to speak professionally or speak better at your job, comes down to what we call the difference between being a spotlight speaker and a lighthouse speaker. A spotlight speaker comes on stage or comes in front of the meeting and is like, how do I do a good job? How do I look good? How will people like me? Mm-hmm. And that can be totally nerve-wracking because it puts your success in the approval of others, which is totally uncontrollable. But if you go up on stage or in front of your meeting or boardroom and shift the light from a spotlight to what we call a lighthouse, which its goal is to guide people and navigate, then your mission going up there is like, how do I get my point across in a way that they'll understand? How do I make the impact? How do I serve this audience? And so one of the biggest shifts you can make as a speaker, whether you're speaking professionally or speaking at work, is who you're doing it for. Are you doing it for yourself as a spotlight speaker, or are you doing it for the people in the room, which is a lighthouse speaker?
I love that.
Yeah.
All right. So we'll wrap up today. I'd love to have you on another time.
We'll do another absolutely.
Part
I love
two
it.
At some point.
Yeah.
So, and let's talk, let's speak specifically to women, maybe professionals.
Yeah.
And you, whether it's advice, whether it's a question, maybe it's challenging them.
Yeah.
What would you share kind of a lasting impression on the conversation today to get them started, that first step forward?
I would say something that might save you some time or save you some energy is to first look, I call it the purpose test in my book, Chasing the Bright Side. And what I do is I say, imagine the thing that you're chasing, whether it's a business idea, promotion, whatever it might be. Mm-hmm. And imagine you got that thing, whatever it is, but no one knew it was you. You had to remain anonymous. Mm. Your name wasn't on it. You couldn't publish it on LinkedIn. Would you still do it? And I think that before we like go enter into something, especially in this world of comparison, social media, and seeing what success is for other people, first establishing what success is for us, because we'll do something anonymously if we care enough about the purpose behind it. But if it is just for perception, then save yourself the time and the energy and find something else. Mm. So try, if I got it, no one knew it was me, would I still do it?
Yeah, I love that. I love that a lot. I think I remember Tim Ferriss saying something like, if you can't post it on social media, would you still do it?
Yeah. Same kind of thing. Am I doing this for, what is it, like cause or applause? It's just like checking yourself before you, I won't say wreck yourself because that would be too cheesy, but checking yourself before you pursue it is a really good gut check.
Yeah. Jess, thank you so much.
Thanks, Brian, for having me. This is really fun. We need to do more in person.
Yeah. I know. I appreciate it. This is going to be a good catalyst to that going forward.
Yeah.
Share with everyone where the best place to find Mic Drop.
Yeah.
Say hello to you.
MicDropWorkshop.com. We have a bunch of free trainings and resources to get started. And then I would say if you want something that can kind of help keep you in line each week, I send out a hype text every Monday at 11 a.m. Eastern. So you can text the word hype to 704-228-9495. And that's the best way to reach me too. I also read them and it's not a robot. It's me. Yeah.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
Thank you again. I appreciate it. Yeah, it's a lot of fun.
Hey everyone. And just one more quick thing before you head off on your day. If you're enjoying this podcast and are looking for other resources and tools to help you get started and move forward toward a happier and more fulfilling life, then I'd encourage you to head over to my website, brianandraco.com, and hit the subscribe button in the upper right corner. There you can find my newsletter and blog subscriptions, where I share insights and information around getting unstuck, perspective, mindset, relationships, habits, and much more. If you get a chance to sign up, I hope you enjoy. Thanks again for listening in. And have a phenomenal day.